life after coronavirus will never be the same as before, will it? We're at the beginning of the end, and we're waiting for a new beginning. And the forecasts for 2021 are starting to appear one by one. Some of them are more optimistic than others. So today I'd like to share two sessions with you that will help you make the best of 2021. Firstly, I'm going to share three tips for 2021 if you're interested in getting involved in property investment. And then I'm going to have a chat with Dr. Nicola Powell, Senior Research Analyst at the Domain Group. We're going to talk a bit about the trends that Domain have noticed and what's ahead for property. So at the end of today's session, you're going to be well equipped to have an understanding of where we are and what's ahead. I'm also going to share with you my regular mindset moment. So welcome to today's episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
A couple of days ago, I was asked by Sarah O'Carroll, the editor of Yahoo Finance, to give three property tips for property investors to help them become successful in 2021 for something that Yahoo Finance ran, a special event they called a Power Hour. Now, to get Michael to cut down to three tips is actually very difficult, but I'd like to share those with you before I go into my chat with Dr. Nicola Powell from Domain. And the first tip I shared was that property investment is a process, not an event. What I was explaining was that to be successful in property, it's more than just doing some research on the internet. It's more than just inspecting a couple of properties and then eventually buying one. Of course, searching for a property is very, very different from researching the property markets. So while a lot of us know a little bit about a patch or two of property, we don't have an extensive knowledge of the Australian property markets, so therefore we're biased. I also explained to her that successful investors have a long-term strategy to grow their wealth. And they also don't just look at property, but they have the correct asset protection structures in place, the right finance structures in place, including things like insurance to mitigate their risks. And I explained that they get a good team around them to level the playing field. They know who to ask advice from, and they understand the difference between a salesperson who represents the seller and independent advice that they'd get from a property strategist or a buyer's agent. The second bit of advice I gave the readers of Yahoo Finance and the people who attended this event was that location will do 80% of the heavy lifting of your investment properties. Now, you've heard me say that before, but what I want to make sure you understand is that some locations over the last decade have outperformed others by 50 and some even by 100%. And that's not just with regard to capital growth, but also rental growth. So how do you identify these locations? What makes some locations more desirable than others? And I explained to her that it has a lot to do with demographics. We look for locations that are gentrifying, but also lifestyle locations, destination locations, areas where aspirational and affluent people want to live, because in the long term, these are going to outperform. It's well known that the rich don't like to travel, and they're prepared to, and they can afford to pay for the privilege of living in these sort of lifestyle suburbs and locations. So we look for areas which have got a high walk score, meaning they've got easy access to everything you need. So lifestyle and destination suburbs, where there's a wider range of amenities within 20 minutes walk or drive or cycle, they're likely to outperform in the future. At the same time, many of these suburbs are going to be undergoing gentrification. In other words, the suburbs are going to be where people's incomes are growing and therefore their ability to pay more to buy properties is going to be higher. But similarly, the tenants who choose to live in those areas are going to be able to pay you more rent. So some tenants, unfortunately, can't afford to buy. They can't even afford to rent. And so a lot of tenants rent because they can't afford to buy. But there's a lot of tenants who rent in certain locations for lifestyle, and they're the ones who can afford to pay more for their properties when they rent them, and eventually they're going to maybe live in those areas and buy them, but they're the sort of suburbs we want to invest in. They're the ones that are going to outperform. So I was then asked, well, is there a particular area? Is it Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane? And I explained to her, no, there are multiple property markets in Australia. In every capital city, there are multiple markets, subdivided by geography, by price point, by type of property. So when somebody tells you the Australian property market's doing this, or the Sydney property market's doing that, don't pay attention, because that's the type of information that's of no use. You need to examine what's happening more granularly at the property market level. So I was asked, well, is it the right time to buy a property? Is it too early? Is it too late? And I explained that you can't pick the top and you can't pick the bottom of the property market, so don't even try. Having said that, I believe our capital cities have passed the bottom, and I believe when we look back next year, you're going to see that in mid-October this year, in general, our property market have turned. Now, I'm not suggesting every segment of the market has turned. It hasn't. There's still going to be pain in certain segments of the market. But rather than try and time the market, it's much better to buy the best asset you can afford and hold it for the long term. I explained that the money's going to run out long before the opportunities will. So rather than buying just any property, buy investment-grade properties, ones that are going to produce wealth, producing rates of return, and own the best assets you can afford to, rather than timing. Because some investors, I don't know if you've noticed, some investors can actually create wealth at any stage in the property cycle. Have you noticed how some do well in good times and also in bad times? Market timing doesn't seem important to them. On the other hand, other investors do poorly in good times, and even worse in bad times. Market timing doesn't have much of an effect on them either. Interesting, isn't it? So what makes a good investor? Well, you've heard me talk about it before. They have a good team around them. They've got the right knowledge, but I think more importantly, they've got the right mindset. They're the three tips I gave to Yahoo Finance's audience, but I'm going to give you one more, and that is don't be scared of taking on debt in today's market, because debt is not a problem. Not being able to repay the debt's an issue, meaning cash flow management's going to be critical to your wealth creation. So it's important to understand the three types of debt. Bad debt, so don't spend money on depreciating items. Necessary debt, such as the non-tax deductible debt against your home. And good debt, against appreciating assets, and debt that you can borrow today at 1.5-2% if it's a home loan, or 2.5-3% if it's a investment loan. When the property is going to go up in value, double that, and the rent's going to go up as well. It's never been cheaper than now to borrow. It's never been cheaper than now to hold on to properties. The difference between the rental returns, the income, the yields you're getting, and the outgoings has never been as low as this. So I would like to remind you that strategic property investors don't only buy property, they buy themselves time by having the right finance strategies to be able to hold on to their properties to get through the property cycle. Now, we're going to be bringing you the Michael Yardley podcast twice a week over the Christmas period, where we're going to help you take advantage of the moving property market. But as I said, I believe you're going to look back and say, hey, it all slowed down in the first half of 2020 and the market bottomed in October 2020. And when you look back in the year's time, you're probably going to be surprised how certain properties are going to increase in value a lot. Having said that, not all will. So if you want to understand which properties are going to outperform, you're going to need more than the buyer's agent, because you're going to find most buyer's agents, and boy, there's lots of new ones around at the moment, have got a vested interest because they only know a certain area. And if they say they fly in and they fly out to a different state, run away, because they can't have the on-the-ground perspective that locals have got. You probably even need more than the property strategist. You need a holistic approach to your wealth, and that's what you're going to get from my team at Metropole. We don't sell property. We help beginning investors get in the market. We help a lot of experienced investors get their next level of their property investment. And we help many experienced investors become property developers as well. So have a look at our website, metropole.com.au, and I'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey. Well, it's that time of the year when it's appropriate to look back and see how our property markets have performed and to look forward to see what's in store for the coming year. Now, no one will ever forget 2020. It affected everyone to some extent. But interestingly, it hasn't affected our property markets as badly as some had predicted. Earlier this year, that 1-in-100-year pandemic that we were working our way through had almost all of the analysts suck it into becoming property bears. They made extraordinarily pessimistic projections of price falls of 10%, 15%, some even up to 30%. But that didn't eventuate. And interestingly, they're turning around now, and most people believe that we're past the bottom of this property cycle. So to discuss what's happened in the year past in property and to look forward to what's in the year ahead, I'm joined today with Dr. Nicola Powell, who's the Senior Research Analyst for Domain. Now, Nicola's the leading force behind Domain's data reports that keeps us up to date with what's happening in our property markets. So I look forward to hearing her thoughts. Welcome, Nicola.
Hello, Michael.
Now, Nicola, a lot of Australians love property. Many of us love property data, but that's something you do all day. And I bet some of the people listening to this, they'd love your job. So how did you get involved in property analytics as a career?
So I'm probably one of those annoying people that just absolutely loves their job. I really do like deep diving into the property analytics and understanding what consumers are doing, how they're doing their searches. So for me, I mean, I've got a strong background in research and analytics, and that morphed into specializing then into property. And I think, you know, anybody who's looking to move into a property analytics career or being a property economist, you know, obviously you can go down the economics route, learning about modeling. But I think really in the data age that we are in, one of the key skill sets I think would be suitable is learning things like coding, script writing, so you're actually able to dive into the deep warehouses of data and, you know, understand what's going on.
Well, you're into it full time. So it's been an interesting year. It started on a high. I remember the beginning of this year, everyone felt very positive about property. And then we were hit by a pandemic and our markets went into lockdown. But it looks like we're going to finish on a high again. What have been the property highlights for you in 2020, Nicola?
So I've got two main highlights. I think the first one is that it's taken a pandemic for us to reimagine our work lives and having that balance. I think it's really changed this year. And the second one is the reaction of our housing markets when faced with social distancing rules and lockdowns and how they actually reacted to that. And I really think the digital transformation that we saw, for example, in the auction market, where, you know, the on-site auction ban meant that we had to be agile in this industry. We went to virtual inspections and virtual auctions. So they're my two main ones.
Well, let's go through each of those in turn. And I think what it's done is bring forward some technology, some ways that may have eventually, we would have eventually got to anyway. The work from home, we were just before we pressed the record button, having a talk about how it suits your lifestyle, how it happens to suit my lifestyle, won't suit everybody. But I can't see us getting back to most of us working 100% in the office moving forward.
I absolutely agree with that. I think for those desk-based workers, if they can continue working from home, I think many will choose to. I do think there is a social aspect that is important to be part of a workforce and being present in an office. But I think even if we have this combined, you know, part working from home, part being in the office, I think for many it will suit their lifestyle. I mean, I've got two young children, as I was telling you earlier. And for myself, not going into the office is one less place for me to be. And when you've got that craziness of school and daycare drop-off, it just makes life so much easier.
So some people have got the discipline to be able to do it and others haven't. But I think it's also made us value various things, including family, including friends, but also neighbourhood. Where we work is one place, where we live is another place. But then that third place, the place around us, the neighbourhood, that's become even more important recently, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And I think even the amenities within our homes has absolutely changed. I mean, one of the interesting behavioural things that we saw consumers doing was the use of the word home office. So we've traditionally seen study being a key search term for property hunters, whether they're renting or whether they're looking to buy. But what we saw during the lockdowns, and this was very prominent in Victoria was the increase in the use of the word home office. Now, it's certainly not one of the top keyword searches, but it was this change that people started to think about, how am I using my home? And I actually need a dedicated workspace. And I do wonder whether, you know, even perhaps the layout of our homes may morph over time. You know, we've gone very much this open plan homes. And I do think for those that are working from home, we do need these homes that are a bit segregated. I think anybody that's had to homeschool their children has really cried out for the additional space to be able to segregate themselves to then actually be able to do their work efficiently.
Sure. So anyone who's gone through this and had to suffer the homeschooling or work from the kitchen and dining room table and share it is moving forward going to look for something different. They're going to want their Zoom room. The open space living probably isn't going to work as well. Similarly, as I was starting to say, I think they're also going to want to be in a neighbourhood where there's, with that old concept of the 20-minute neighbourhood of being close to a number of schools, a number of amenities, whether it's the gym, whether it's the restaurants, whether it's the cafes. Have you noticed any difference in search looking at neighbourhoods? Walk scores, things like that.
Yeah, yes, we have. We've seen an adjustment in popularity of keywords. And I think which plays into this, it's more those kind of lifestyle words I think have been front of mind for home hunters. And I think that really reflects how we're adapting to new ways of working. And, you know, as we were talking about before, that kind of work-life balance has become blurred this year and the way we use our homes has changed in 2020. And when you have a look at the words that home hunters are looking for or using, the biggest movers have been around that kind of lifestyle. So rural was up nearly 300% in terms of its use. Acreage, cottage, water view, single level, balcony, deck. So really kind of, particularly when you look at rural and acreage, it's which are the two biggest keyword search in terms of movement, it really shows that people are reassessing their situation and where they live. And even when you have a look at, say, views per listing and our buyer demand indicator, regional areas have seen an increase in interest more so than our capital cities.
That's interesting. I know one of my daughters who's got a profession, she's a GP and her husband's a high school teacher, they thought of moving, and that was during the height of the lockdown where they were locked down. It was a good idea at the time. It'll be interesting to see whether that translates now that life is getting more normal again.
Yes, I have had the kind of same debate in my mind, whether it's kind of here to stay. And I think, you know, when you have a look at who could do this home-based working, less than one-fifth of low-wage workers can work from home. That's the estimates. And three-fifths of high-wage workers can work from home. So there's this big skew to those that are on a higher income. So I think what that may mean is that it might result in high-income workers purchasing a second home or moving to a regional location. But I do think one of the trends that may come out of this is I think it may spur on the purchase of a secondary home in a coastal area, particularly with our international borders being closed and really the desirability of travelling overseas. I mean, Australia is a very desirable country to reside in because of the way that we have successfully contained the virus. So, you know, I think, you know, we have seen quite a dramatic change. I do think for some it will spur on a change in lifestyle, but I can't see a big exodus of people moving away from our major capital cities because there is, you know, it's human behaviour. We want to be near other people. We want to be close to the arts, the theatre, and, you know, all of those lifestyle aspects that we enjoy.
Sure. Younger people are going to want to stay in the big cities because there's more opportunity to meet a new partner. As you have young families, you're going to want to be where there's an abundance of schools, maybe not just one. Older people are going to want to still be where their grandchildren and their children are. They're not going to want to swap doctors or dentists. But we are also seeing on the ground the trend that those who can afford it are definitely looking for another holiday home rather than going to Europe, rather than going on the cruise. When's that going to happen again? Why not get a a nice holiday home. Now, I know you've been doing a lot of data in Australia, but I also know from some of your research, you've been looking at how COVID has affected other property markets in the world. What's happened overseas, Nicola?
So the pandemic has affected our global real estate markets in very different ways. And I think it really does depend upon the level of lockdown that each of these countries had. So if, I mean, we look towards, say, Sweden, that during kind of, you know, the April, May, June period, there was no real lockdown. There wasn't any drop in new listings coming to the market. And the market during that period of time operated fairly normally. But I think really what we're seeing currently in Sweden is that they are, you know, lockdowns are a greater possibility because of the further outbreak. So it'll be interesting to see what unravels there. If we hop to the US experienced a very steep decline in new listings coming to the market, early during the pandemic. And the recovery of that market has been very slow and very gradual. It's taken about 3 months for those new listings to get back up to what would be normal for this time of year. So it kind of then poses the question of what happened to all of those listings that would have come on during the peak of the, you know, the lockdown and outbreaks. Where did they all go? Because they haven't come back to the market in the US. The UK was a slightly different scenario. They had a strict lockdown. What they found coming out of lockdown, they came out of lockdown, sorry, in summer, which is normally a very quiet time of year for the UK real estate market. But what they found when they came out of lockdown, it became unseasonably strong. It's still a very strong market. What they have had there, though, is a holiday on stamp duty. So what that has meant, I think people are bringing forward decisions. So the market activity is still running fairly hot in the UK. They've seen lots of price growth. It's in September, the price growth had hit a 2.5-year high. But I think what they're seeing is lots of people are bringing forward their decisions because early next year is the deadline to avoid paying stamp duty. So it's just for a short period of time. And the abolishment of stamp duty for this short period of time captures around 80% of the residential transactions. So I do think it is pent up supply and demand in the UK, but it's also a change in housing preferences and the fact that they've abolished stamp duty. But I think if we were going to do a country that, for example, you know, we could compare Melbourne to is New Zealand. So New Zealand really went hard and fast. They went for an elimination approach with COVID and it had an immediate effect on new listings when they were in that stage four lockdown. Coming out, they saw a rebound in listings and activity levels that were unseasonable. And if we were going to pick a country that had a true V-shaped recovery, it would be New Zealand. And when you have a look across all of those different markets, what it suggests is that the severity of that lockdown really does impact the level of decline in listings and sales activity, but it also has a correlation to how quickly the market rebounds. And it's one of the things that we're currently seeing in Melbourne in terms of the rebound in listings.
Well, we're seeing a rebound in listings, but also, as you said, the pent-up demand. And so the number of sales has increased as well. And it looks like we've turned the corner with auction clearance rates high, with the number of transactions slowly increasing. But the big thing, I guess, is consumer confidence, because unless consumers are confident about their financial future or their jobs, they're not really going to spend big on a new home or on a property investment. Clearly, the markets have been very resilient, though. Those predictions from the property bears didn't come to fruition. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, we did certainly have some wild predictions, I think, early on. And also, I mean, the reaction from consumers was pretty dramatic when we, you know, first went into lockdown. And even when Melbourne had the secondary outbreak, the dip in consumer confidence, you know, reacted to that across Australia because we were all vulnerable to secondary outbreaks. I mean, we still are. But property prices have been remarkably resilient. And when you have a look historically, property prices have fared fairly well against negative economic shocks. When you see major share market losses and a recession, it doesn't necessarily mean prices will fall. And that's what the historical price series has taught us. So even during, say, the GFC, where Australia's economy was much more globalized, the slowdown in both the global and Australian finance sector did impact employment and incomes and borrowing capacity. But even then, during the GFC, we found through our price series that houses fell around 5% and units fell around 2%. But I think prices in Australia have been ever so resilient. I would say houses are performing much better compared to units. The price falls have been minimal to date, and that's because we've got unprecedented government stimulus, the ability to pause mortgages, low interest rates. We've had another interest rate cut. And I think over that time, that pullback in seller activity during the lockdown periods is really one of the things that's helped to shelter values from any significant price falls.
I think the other thing was there weren't the forced sales. People were worried that we're going to fall off that cliff in September. Maybe it's going to come in March. They're saying, I'm not sure that's the case at all. But the government learned from previous economic slumps to get in early this time rather than protect it. Now, some people are saying it's a Ponzi scheme. The government's supporting us. They're supporting property values. I see it's the government doing their job. The government's job is to look after its constituents, you and me. Their job is to give us hospitals and police and infrastructure and also to support the value of our house. I think they recognise that if our homes, our castles lose value, we're going to lose confidence and that's not going to help the economy. So the government's done its job throwing everything, including the kitchen sink, at it this time. And so I can see that housing values have remained strong, but it hasn't done the same for our rental markets, has it? The rental markets in some areas have suffered, particularly apartments compared to houses.
That is absolutely the case. I think, you know, the rental markets have seen a much greater disruption compared to the sales. And when you have a look across Australia, those areas that have been hardest hit have been CBD areas. So the vacancy rate in Melbourne, for example, is just over 14% in October. That's the highest vacancy rate out of all of the SA3 areas across Australia. And when you say,
sorry, just to make that clear, Nicola, that's not all of the suburbs of Melbourne. You're talking about the Melbourne CBD region, yes.
That is absolutely correct. So it's called Melbourne City, which is an SA3 area.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. That's the highest vacancy rate. So it's that CBD area. But when you look at the top 10, Brisbane inner city area is also in the top 10 and Sydney inner city area. So it's really concentrated to within our CBD rental markets, which proportionately have more rental properties compared to other areas. And I think, you know, we've seen the demand shocks have been concentrated towards that rental market. I think international border closures has obviously stopped overseas migration. It's stopped foreign students coming to Australia. And we know that most overseas migrants actually rent upon arrival. So, you know, that's taken away a lot of demand in the rental market. And also our CBD areas have seen the greatest job losses. And we also know that the greatest job losses and wage losses have been towards the younger demographic and lower income households, which are much more likely to rent than be owning their own home.
So vacancy rates for apartments are high. What about for houses?
So that vacancy rate is actually a combined for both houses and units.
Very few houses in the Melbourne inner city region, though. And what we've found in the middle ring and inner ring suburbs, houses are still popular, whether it's a fact of just lack of supply or some people now choosing to live in villa units, townhouses, houses, as opposed to apartments. With the change of lifestyle we spoke about a bit earlier on, would be interesting to know. Buyer and seller confidence has clearly increased. What are you noticing with the searches and the listings on Domain recently?
So in terms of searches, there is definitely interest in real estate. We're seeing our buyer demand indicator is elevated compared to this time last year. And the buyer demand indicator looks at behavioural searches and it puts you into a bucket if you do an action on Domain that means you have a greater intention to actually make a purchase. So whether it's kind of, you know, shortlisting the home or doing a virtual inspection, booking an inspection, so on and so forth. So we are seeing that in interest in real estate is elevated compared to this time last year. And I think, you know, in terms of listings, we have seen a rebound in listings across all of our capital cities, particularly so in Melbourne. And that's due to obviously that pent-up supply and the demand, demand that occurred during that lockdown period. I think many of our capital city markets, in terms of those listing volumes, became unseasonable for a period of time. But now what we're seeing is they're actually now going back to what would be deemed as a near normal listing volume for this time of year. And I think for some of our capital cities, there was a bit of a blur from winter and into spring because of this unseasonable period during winter.
It'll be interesting to see what happens over the Christmas break. Traditionally, the property markets, the estate agents, the banks, the conveyancers go on holidays for 3-4 weeks and not a lot happens. Maybe this year they're going to stay home and take on some transactions because they missed out for a couple of months.
I think you're right. I think particularly so in Melbourne. I think that we will see, new listings have soared to unseasonable levels. And I think that what we are likely to see is new listings will probably still come onto the market, edging near into kind of December, which tends to be where we see a drop off in activity. I do think we'll have a shorter holiday period in Melbourne. I'm less convinced around the other capital cities that have had their markets transacting near normal, but I think Melbourne will be the one that bucks that trend.
You're right. And it's not just the markets that have been near normal. Life has been normal. Only a couple of days ago, somebody was saying to me, we're all in the same boat. And I said, no, we're not. We've been in the same ocean, but the people in Melbourne have been in a very different boat to the people in Queensland. And now again, unfortunately, yes, there are some cases popping up in other states. So we're getting close to the end of the year and it's almost the time that people pull out their crystal balls to look forward. What do you see happening to our property markets moving forward into another year?
There is still a bit of uncertainty around what will happen next year because what we are seeing is fiscal support is being removed rapidly. And obviously, we've got the ending of mortgage holidays early next year. So there definitely is still risk. But I do think that that risk to, say, prices will be concentrated towards our CBD markets, particularly those that have a high vacancy rate that are not necessarily attractive anymore at the moment for investors. So I think if we start to see a higher level of urgent or distressed selling, which at the moment we're not seeing, I think it's likely to be concentrated in the CBDs. I think they're our vulnerability in terms of if I was going to pick anywhere in Australia that is more vulnerable. But I think some of our other markets, for example, Perth, there's so many green shoots coming out of the Perth market that I do think that they are now into recovery mode, particularly even in their rental market where vacancy rates are extraordinarily tight, even within the Perth inner city area, which does buck many of our other rental markets, CBD markets.
I guess we've got to remember that there isn't one Melbourne property market or one Sydney or Perth property market. There are markets within markets, apartments, houses, townhouses, price points, different geographic locations. So at times like this, when the markets are changing, it's really important to get down more granularly. The markets are fragmented. And I agree with you that there'll be a while before the inner city markets, apartment markets in particular, are going to catch up again. They even started this year with a little bit of problems around them with the all being tarred with the same brush with the challenges, the structural problems that were occurring in New South Wales and some of the cladding problems in Melbourne. All that means, as far as I can see, is the next round of development, that's going to be quite some way off. And eventually any oversupply is going to be taken up. But that'll take a little while. It'll be a while before those apartments in the CBD get filled up. 14% is a large number of properties vacant, isn't it?
It's huge. It's the highest on record for Melbourne City. And I think you are totally right. I think that development cycle will slow down. I think particularly if you put it in light with what our forecasted population growth was going to be with international borders closing, our population growth isn't going to be anywhere near what was forecast. But what I would say for Australia, the silver lining is it is a very desirable country to reside. And once we are out at the end of this pandemic, I think that in itself could be a draw card for overseas migrants to relocate.
also, expats are probably going to come back. They may realise that the life over there isn't as good as back home. Some are having difficulty coming back. And yes, I can imagine a lot of those people in Hong Kong are going to wonder, where should I be putting my money, as in other parts of the world? So Australia has, and New Zealand, have come out as the poster children of COVID. But it just reminds us that we're living in the best country in the world. And, you know, while some people would say that it was a challenging year, it's probably the best time ever as well, because there's some great future ahead for Australia and for our property markets. So thank you so much for your time, Nicola. Look forward to catching up with you again and hearing what's happening on Domain.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In today's mindset message, I'd like to share a lesson from one of my early mentors, the late Jim Rohn, and I quote him often because he made a huge difference in my life, and I hope by passing on some of his messages that influenced me, I can help you become more successful in all areas of your life. And currently we're having our share of challenges, aren't we? And I hope that today's message is going to help you get through some of these difficult times, because Jim Rohn taught me that if you can change yourself, you can change your life. He said life's about constant, predictable patterns of change. And the only constant factor will be our feelings and our attitudes towards life. Jim Rohn said, as human beings, we've got the power of attitude, and that attitude determines our choices, and the choices determine our results. Now, you've heard me say it before, your thoughts lead to your feelings lead to your actions, and your actions lead to your results. So clearly, the inside world, what's going on in your head, will determine what's happening in your outside world. Jim Rohn said it differently. And he said, all that we are and all that we can become has indeed been left to us to decide and to interpret through our attitude and choices. So he's also saying that, hey, we can determine our future. So where you are today is a result of all the decisions you've chosen to make and the decisions you've not chosen to make in the past. And that's led you to be where you are now. So let's have a think about how you're thinking now so you can be in a different spot moving forward. See, Jim Rohn said life is like the changing seasons, and you can't change the seasons, but you can change yourself. So the first major lesson Jim Rohn taught me was, in life you've got to learn how to handle the winters. And he said they come regularly, right after autumn. Some are long, some are short, some are difficult, some are easy, but they're always right after autumn, said Jim Rohn, and that's never going to change. And he also said there's all kinds of winters. The winters where you can't figure it out. The winter where everything goes wrong. There are economic winters, social winters, personal winters. And at the moment I know a lot of people have got a whole lot of those all together, haven't we? Wintertime can bring disappointments, and disappointments are common to all of us. So Jim Rohn said you must learn how to handle the winters. You must learn how to handle difficulty, because it always comes after opportunity, and that's never going to change. So the big question is, what do you do about winters? Because you can't just pull those months out of the calendar, simply tear them out, and you're not going to have June, July, August. You're not going to change the outside world, are you? But here is what you can do. You can get stronger. You can get wiser. You can get better. Remember that trio of words, stronger, wiser, better. The winters won't change, but you can. Now, before I understood this, I used to wish for summer when it was winter. When things were difficult, I wished they were easy. I didn't know any better. But then when my mentor, Jim Rohn, gave me the answer, I changed, because he said, don't wish it were easier, wish it were better. Don't wish for fewer problems, wish for more skills. Don't wish for less challenges, wish for more wisdom. So there's my message to you today. Now, you've possibly heard me say this before, because I have mentioned this in previous podcasts, but I thought the current winter many of us are going through at the moment is a great time to remind yourself that if you change yourself, you can change your life. I hope those couple of tips we've given you is going to help make property in 2021 better for you. And if you got some benefit from today's show, please tell somebody else about it. There's a share button on every podcast app, or just tell the world. Of course, you can leave a message on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to this. Now, if I read yours out, as I'm about to read it out for Lorraine B21, and you email me, michael@metropole.com.au, I'd love to gift you one of my books as a way of saying thank you. Now, Lorraine said, "You've changed the way I think about money. Thanks for the amazing podcast, Michael. I can't wait to get your sessions twice a week." I've gone back and listened to almost all the back copies, and it's made me think very differently about money and my financial future. So I really appreciate all the effort you're putting into it. Well, thank you for those kind words, Lorraine, and that makes it all worthwhile. By the way, if you want to catch up with me in between the twice weekly podcasts, you can catch me on social media. And recently we've opened up a private Facebook group for people like you who are interested in property. So just look at for the Property Update Facebook group on Facebook. I guess that's the best place to find it, isn't it? And ask to join, and I'd love to have you as part of my community. I'll catch up with you again real soon, twice a week for the Michael Yardney podcast. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropol, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropol to help you?